Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Spech.
Hello.
Great weather this week, Derek.
It was hot this week.
Yeah, it's like summer's already here.
I had to walk between buildings at work, and it's like a 20-minute walk, and it's like I was sweating so bad. It's like, this is wrong. Why am I so hot?
It's not supposed to be this hot in May. Yeah, no, I'm sitting in there inside all day at work and thinking, oh, okay, this is nice and whatnot. I do my work, go outside, like, what the?
Well, I know, and that's the problem at my work. They keep the air conditioning so low, and so I'm like wearing a jacket or a hoodie at my desk. Okay, I got to go to the other building, so I start walking outside. It's like, okay, strip off the hoodie. Okay, slow down.
Derek, okay, HR slow would like down to talk more. To you today because apparently you showed up at the other building nude.
Can I take my clothes off? Yeah, it was 25 degrees, 26 degrees.
Well, in the house, it was, because our thing is upstairs in Fahrenheit, 80. It was reading 80.
Oh, wow.
That's like, that's too hot. That's too hot for inside the house. Mind you, when the sun goes down in the afternoon, it comes right in our back windows and our screen doors.
So. Oh, yeah. Summer is here.
Summer is here. Well,
technically not until the 22nd of June, but...
Summer's here. Yeah. Summer weather is here. There's forest fires happening already and everything. So.
Oh, somebody showed me a thing. So, forest fires, yes, but I want to, before I forget. So, we're right on the lake at work, and oh my goodness, there's all the midges and all the black blob, whatever the bugs are that are hatching.
Yeah.
You're like, you walk, and all of a sudden, you're like in a cloud of them, and you got to close your eyes because they're getting in your eyes and nose and ears. And I was walking, and somebody saw me, like, dodging a cloud of bugs. He go, hey, try this. He stopped. He says, do this. And he said, you walk along, you hit the bugs, look sideways, turn 90 degrees. I just turned away from the mic. So turn your head 90 degrees and walk with your ear going forward. And he said, what? He says, just try it. So I left him. He went the other way. I'm walking along. You see the cloud of bugs in front of me. They're just spinning in the air in front of me. I just turned my head 90 degrees to the side, and I walked right through them. It was not a problem. I don't know why that worked.
But now you can't hear out of your left ear.
It's packed with bugs.
It's crammed with a big wad of bugs.
Yeah, it was pretty wild.
So I was up in Temagami for a few days over the weekend.
Yes.
And there, so how were the bugs? There was a boatload of them.
Yeah.
I mean, there was black flies and mosquitoes galore.
And they were biting? Or is it still too early?
No, they weren't all biting. I mean, I got bites. Yes. But bouncing off my face.
Yeah. Constantly. They aim for your eyeballs, right?
Yeah. I don't know how many bugs end up in the eyes.
Yeah.
You know? It just, and that's it. It's like, it wasn't the fact that they're biting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I got some bug bites, and that doesn't really bug.
Your ears, your eyes, and your nose. Yeah. And
or you're hearing bzzz, 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 and they're in the beard.
Yeah.
Right? So a giant beard is a giant bug trap. So you get all these bugs in there, and you got to give it a fluff, and all these bugs fly out. You know? And, they are biting. But
I think they're just starting to.
Yeah. Yeah. But the majority of them are just bouncing off you.
It's like
just
the first hatch doesn't
know
bite.
Better.
They don't eat. They don't feed. It's like the second hatch or the third hatch or whatever. I don't know.
I'm not a bug, so I don't know. I don't know what rules or what union they follow. So, a little instruction book on how to be a mosquito or a black fly.
I'm not a bug expert, but I pretend to be one on TV.
Right? But yeah, so they were, I should have tried to walk sideways.
Yeah,
like a crab.
Yeah. No, you just got to flip your head sideways.
And then walk into things.
Look over your shoulder and it just, it seems to throw them off because they're looking for your eyes and stuff, right?
Yeah. Or just wear sunglasses.
Mm-hmm. It might be a little bit dangerous on a portage.
They can't see your eyes if you're wearing sunglasses. Or you keep them closed.
I always find the worst part is the horse flies in like June. Oh.
When they're in the ankle
biters,
because
you don't even
right?
know they're there until it feels like somebody just shot you. It's like, what was that?
Right on the ankle.
Yeah.
Yeah. And by the time you go down to slap
there's
it,
there's a pound of flesh.
It sees you coming.
Yeah, it's long gone.
It's still biting while it's watching your hand coming, right? But yeah, it's, you know, it's part of it though. I, for the most part, and as I'm scratching because I'm thinking of the map. But you know what I'm not thinking about when I'm out there and I don't think about it until I get home and I see pictures? Ticks.
Yes.
I do not think about ticks while I'm out there at all. And then I come home and I see pictures. Oh, I was just out this weekend and I got this and I got that and I got this. And I'm, oh, I better do a full body check. So I look at my studly self in the mirror and there's nary a, mind you, I lifted up my, because they say warm area, warm areas, yeah. Right?
Armpits so
I,
and groin.
I lift up
and...
my arm to check and there's a black something in my armpit. And I'm like, thinking, oh no. Nah, I was wearing a black shirt. It's just fluff. It was a fluff tick. It's a new type of Canadian tick. It's the fluff tick. Doesn't bite. Totally harmless. Nice and fluffy.
Yeah.
So fluffy.
I've seen a few people, just as we keep having mild winters, I've seen a few videos this year where people are like, they, you see the guy with his phone, he goes up to the grass and he just rests his hand against the tall grass bit. Mm-hmm. And you can see about a dozen ticks climb off the grass onto his hand.
Really?
And then he flicks them off. And but it's just like all on one piece of grass. It's like, holy cow. And then he another guy showed a video of, it was the base of a tree. And the ground, there was hundreds of ticks milling about at the base of the tree.
Really?
It's like, that's crazy.
Yeah, remind me not to go visit them.
I know, right? Where is that at?
Well, knock on wood so far,
mm-hmm.
I haven't had any, so. But when I'm out there, I'm not even thinking about ticks.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I'm being bombarded with mosquitoes and black flies.
It's too distracting. It's the immediate problem. The tick problem will come up later.
The ticks are sneaking up behind you while you're being distracted. It's all a plan.
The ticks come along with a bat behind you when you're not looking.
Get you by the legs.
And speaking of bugs, this is the year, the summer of the cicada.
Yeah, what's the deal with that?
So
never really,
what that
they
is,
go through cycles, right?
Yes, they go through cycles, and there's two different species. Anyways, there's two different types of cicadas, and they come up in different times. But this year, because one is on a 17-year cycle and one is on a 12-year cycle, and very rarely do they meet up, but this summer, the cycles have met up, so you have a double whammy of cicadas. And I've been,
but they're just noisy, right?
Very, very noisy.
Yeah.
So apparently it's the males that make all the noise, and because they
hey,
come.
Hey, baby!
exactly. Hey, baby, go over here. Anyways, I've been hearing news stories and stuff about there's some cities in the States that, you know, it's like, you know, they're pulling over the cops or just signaling the cops or calling 911. What's all that noise? What's going on? Are we being attacked? What's happening? It's like, do you guys read newspapers or maybe listen to the news or the radio? Because this has been, they've been talking about this for 2 years.
Wow. Yeah.
But people are like panicked because of all the noise.
Yeah.
Cause
I know they go through the cycles, but it's just like, okay, so what's the big deal? It's just
a bunch of
noisy bugs.
It is noise. Yeah. But they're everywhere. Like these things are big. Like they're like your thumb.
Well, I'm going to start catching some.
I wonder if they're edible. They've got to be edible.
They've got to be. Everything's edible.
Everything's edible, but you know what? Like, do you have...
Question is, do you want it?
How do you prepare them?
Do you want to eat them?
Like, I'm sure they're...
Well, there was a guy up when we were up camping on the weekend, and he was making sardines. They're big sardines, and they're salted, and then he barbecued them.
Oh.
And then he says, yeah, just scrape the skin off, eat the meat, but don't eat the guts.
How do you how do you separate?
I didn't have one. I just said, no, if it's got the head and everything still on looking at me and the guts inside, I'm not eating it.
Yeah.
So I didn't. I just politely walked away.
The smaller sardines.
In the can.
Like the small ones are like 2 inches long. Eat the whole thing. Bones and
these are
guts
like,
and head.
Like 7 inches long sort of.
Yeah. Thing. Yeah. That's a little
bit. Little
there's
bit
more big. Guts.
Yeah. Yeah. More guts. Yeah. Yeah. You don't just pop them bad boys in your mouth.
It's guts just squirted down my throat.
So like I say, I was up in Temagami for a few days. Weather was great. Did a little bit of paddling around. Yeah. Bugs were, like I say, they were bad, but you know. Some people are, the worst I've seen in ages. Well, apparently you haven't been getting out because I've seen them a lot worse.
Yes.
Yeah. In the last year was worse than they are right now. Heard loons for the first time this year.
Oh, yeah? Nice.
Yeah, there's a couple loons on the lake. We went out to see the seagulls' babies.
Oh, yeah.
It's all still just eggs. None of them hatched yet.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you see these. I mean, nobody likes seagulls, but when they're little baby fluffy fuzzy things.
Yeah.
There's a couple little kids up there that would have just loved to see it, but... got out for some paddling. Did a nice morning paddle the day we left.
Nice.
So a bit cloudy with a start. I got a couple of pictures there with the clouds and the rays of the sun trying to come through and stuff like that. So did some black and white stuff while I was up there, photography and whatnot. Did some fishing. Lake trout was a biting. And I did a bit of a fish fry the one night, and then actually caught one to bring home, nice size one. As you can attest, I have never made smoked fish before, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to put this fish, nice lake trout, big lake trout, put it on the smoker, and it came out really nice.
It was fantastic.
It really came out nice, so that'll probably be gone by tomorrow.
I can still smell it on my hands.
Right?
Very yummy.
But I did a lot of just hanging out and relaxing, chatting with people about everything and nothing. Yeah, I didn't have to be doing something every
minute
of the day sort of deal.
Yeah.
Right? Got up there, parked the truck, and it didn't move, and the canoe was basically at the water, and if I wanted to go out, I could go out. If I didn't want to go out, or my chair was there, I could just sit there and sit around the fire. And
was there singing around the fire with guitars?
And no. The people that usually... two guitars were not there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it was somebody's birthday, so that's why we went up there. But just nice to get out of the city and away from all the hustle and bustle. And,
right on.
You know, get up that way and just enjoyed it. It was good.
Nice.
Wish I could have stayed longer.
Yeah.
There was, coming south, all of a sudden it said it's going to take you this long. Then all of a sudden I get to one spot and there's like a 25-minute delay.
Oh.
Great. Stop, go. 25 minutes just to get up by a bridge, and there's people doing the old Trudeau is an idiot, blah, blah, blah. F Trudeau this, F Trudeau that, waving flags and everything like that.
I don't see how that helps.
You know what? You've just pissed everybody off that's coming down this highway trying to get home on a holiday Monday afternoon.
Works against your message.
What is that all about?
Yeah.
Anyway, and then, I guess over one of the, cause I come down around, instead of heading through Barrie, I come around the other side, like the west side of, east side of Lake Simcoe.
Yep. That's where I go to.
So it's easier, right? And, one of the, where the Trent Severn comes through a game bridge under the, well, they're doing work on the bridge.
Oh,
so
okay.
They got it cut to one lane and there's a road that joins there as well. So you got all these people trying to join the road, and then some people are coming across the bridge one way, then the light turns and everybody goes across the bridge, and then there's people trying to merge while these people are going. People that are lined up for another 25 minutes behind me are not happy that I'm going to let somebody in. But they end up doing the zipper thing where one person goes, it's sort of deal. So y'all get through eventually. But while I was sitting there for 25 minutes, all of a sudden I get this tornado or thunderstorm watch.
Oh, yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And I just watched this thunderstorm come at me, go over me, pass me. Thunder, lightning.
Oh, yeah.
Heavy rain, everything.
Like, I saw the announcements for it, but we didn't hit us down here.
It hit us, and the entire, like, half hour or whatever that I was waiting in line to cross
that
bridge.
That was Monday afternoon. Monday. Yeah. That one hit us.
Yep. And, so I was, like, moving like 1 foot every 10 minutes sort of thing. And it just came through, did all its thing. And then
Your car was
all that dirt from the back roads that I was on. Well, I was pretty much washed off my truck, but the inside of my, I was following like a couple of vehicles at one point.
On the dirt roads.
Yeah. Oh, like it was dust and dirt and like my entire truck's just coated with this thin film of dust. And it's like, I'm thinking maybe I should just take it to one of those auto detailers.
Yeah.
And then deal with all their nasty glances afterwards.
You want me to clean
their name
that?
Calling, and you could have warned us. We would have hired four more people to clean the inside of your truck. But it was a nice day, or a nice weekend to go up and do some paddling, do some fishing, do some relaxing, hang around a fire, chat with people, and talk with people that have the same ideas about nature and preserving the forests and all that you do.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it was cool.
Nice. Great on.
And you hung around and watched the European dog surfing.
Yes. Yeah. So, yeah, I didn't. I found out about it afterwards, but I saw some videos on it. That was pretty neat. It was international dog surfing, whatever. It's an organization. They started up during COVID. And it's about dog rescue and, you know, trying to send the message to save dogs. Don't send them to the pound and
get
so
out with your dog.
But, yeah, it was Australia in March, a few days ago in Spain. There's an event in Northern California in August. So basically you teach your dog how to surf, and all of the videos shows all the dogs in little tiny life jackets, life preservers, and some of them are surfing with their humans, and some are surfing by themselves or two dogs at a time.
Yeah, I saw this surfboard going by and there's two dogs on it. You guys lose somebody? Yeah, he sucks at surfing.
What I've seen though is you see them the human part of the team is like at the crest of the wave and he just gives the surfboard a shove and then the dogs surf down.
Off they go. Yeah. And I've seen pictures of dogs and they know where to go on the board.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah, they know
backwards,
how to
weight balance, forwards,
yeah.
Right? And that's that's pretty cool. But yeah, there was a one company there, Dingo Natura. They're actually a dog food company that was providing dog rations to abandoned dogs. And the competition that just held in northern Spain tried to mentalize people about the need to adopt dogs from shelters and will provide information to all participants and curious people who come to see the dogs surfing about the steps to take and the form of adoptions. Sponsor Dingo Natura will donate food rations for abandoned dogs. So, yeah, it's more about getting out with your dog as opposed to dropping them off at the shelter since COVID's over, right?
Yep.
So, yeah, it's pretty cool. It's pretty neat.
It's really
see
neat to see the dogs. And it's amazing to see that the dogs they're able to be taught this specific skill about where to stand, how to,
they're smart animals.
From what everything I've seen, the dogs were very much enjoying it.
Yeah. If they had opposable thumbs, man, we'd be in trouble. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Big trouble. Episode 426, we talked about Scott Miller and Scott Duffus doing the Minnesota River.
Yeah, they were getting ready for it.
Yeah, Scott Miller had done the Mississippi last year, part of that record.
He has his current record, doesn't he, for the Mississippi?
Yeah, him and his team did the Mississippi River last year, Guinness World Book Records. So we talked about them doing the Minnesota River and getting the record for that because they said, well, there's no record for it, but it's more along the lines of if people see an easy record to break, it's going to get people out there to try it.
Okay.
Yeah. So they did this. We talked about them going to do it and preparing for it and training and all that. Well, they actually just did it. Minnesota River, 63 hours and 5 minutes. He says, we got awfully lucky with the water levels and the weather. And that's what you got to do. And that's why when we do the Brent Run in the spring, all the water levels are high. So you're not bumping and grinding down rocks. Full moon. So when you're going overnight,
you
got the extra light.
And you have to cross your fingers and hope for good weather.
Yeah.
Because when you did it last time, I set up and held base camp. You guys went up and did the Brent Run. And I remember you saying that you were like at or way ahead of the record on the way up. But then on the way back, you guys hit some headwinds.
Oh, no, that we were ahead of the record until we hit Big Trout.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden the winds hit and you could just see our time drop.
Yeah.
It's like from 7 kilometers an hour to like one.
Yeah. And so it's all about the weather, right?
Yeah.
And so it's all luck of the draw. Like, people who try to do the record for Meanest Link and whatever, right? So
and those have already started this year.
Yes, yes.
Right, there's a group out there right now trying to do that.
That's Camille again.
Yep. So they have a Winona Jensen 18 racing canoe. They launched that below the dam at Ortonville at 5:27 p.m. Thursday, May 9th, and 317 miles or 510 kilometers sprint to Mendota Bridge in Fort Snelling State Park. They arrived there the morning of May 12th. 63 hours, 5 minutes. Their time averages at just over 5 miles an hour, including the time used to take two short sleep breaks and a few 5 and 10 minute stops along the way for food, water, and to change clothes.
So they were moving.
I gotta think the change clothes parts was like taking warm stuff off and or putting warm stuff back on.
Maybe it was a comfort thing.
Yeah.
I know it can make a big difference. Like any time I've been out in inclement weather, it's like a change of clothes, changing into a dry shirt makes a huge difference for me.
Yeah. Fast waters, mild temperatures, even tailwind at opportune times help the two set the bar high for anyone who takes the challenge they now set. Their goal is to establish a registry that will allow other paddlers to set records for runs down Minnesota rivers or to match the time others set. Miller was part of the team that made it to the Guinness World Book of Records for paddling the Mississippi in 16 days, 20 hours, 16 minutes in May last year. Duff is 67, was part of the support team for that run. He and Miller have also paddled in long-distance paddling races, including the arduous Missouri River 340, which is a 340-mile canoe race, paddle race. Support crew followed them along the route and provided pop-up shelters when the two paddlers took stops for sleep, a four-hour break and a two-hour break. Now, we did 40 hours, and we just had, the two-hour break.
Yeah, you guys took us a quick nap.
Yeah, we took a quick nap because a couple of us were stumbling in the on the portage, and so we figured
Not
breaking the record now. So
yeah.
If somebody's getting a bit tired and stumbling on portages, we'll just have a quick snooze, catch our wind, and be gone again. Sport, part of the run was magical. Northern lights flashed and shimmered above them on the night of May 10th. That was a night when all the big northern lights and everything went out, right? True beauty of the adventure was the river itself, according to Miller. They were able to appreciate the epic sweep of it by making such a quick run from a narrow channel at the start to flooded woodlands on the lower reaches. It never disappointed.
Nice.
If you want to see video and photos of their adventure, you can go to the Facebook page at Minnesota Speed Record. They'll be posting information in the future on their registry they hope to set up.
Very cool.
You know what? We talk about that. Who's got 75 days to go chase, some of these big ones? But something like this, like a three-day weekend thing, you get your buddy, let's take four days off.
Yeah.
And we'll, 2 days plus the weekend, and we'll go try something like this, right? If anything else, you have a great time with your buds.
Mm-hmm.
I'm almost empty here.
Yes. So tonight I managed to get my grabby little paws on, Bob Cajun Brewing beer. So they were at a local, farmer's market. And, so I picked up a bunch of that. So it's, we started out with a chocolate stout, which is very good. It's, it has a little bit of sweetness and chocolatey and stouty and caramelly. Very good. And now what we're moving on to the Black Rye IPA. It's very dark. Nice shot there, buddy.
Kind of like that, eh?
Here's a paper towel.
It's not one of us. It's the other.
Usually it's me that spills.
Yeah. It's my house. I'm allowed to spill beer. Where's my dog?
So this here is what? This here is a Black Rye IPA from Bob Cajun Brewing. I like the I like it when people play around with the darker beers. It's like they're one of my favorites. It's more of a winter beer. I like more of a lighter beers in the summer, but
we should have started with this one.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. Oh, we finished with a good one.
You know what the problem is? Not enough of it.
I know, right? That's very good.
Yeah.
Black Rye IPA.
Yeah, I think I like to start this chocolate stout one better. Mind you, I like the stouts.
Yeah, right? But like I was saying earlier, we should have started with the Black Rye because you start with the Black Rye and then you finish with like a dessert beer, like a chocolate stout.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Well, we went chocolate stout. Now we had the Black Rye.
Yeah.
So then we got another one out there. Then we
No, I'm at my limit.
Know your limit. Play within it.
Yeah. And we're just having half beers here.
Yeah.
Sharesies.
Sharesies. Beer buds. For the past 14 years, Ben Pierce has served as the executive director of the Lafayette-based nonprofit Louisiana Swamp Base, as well as director for Swamp Base's partner company, McGee Swamp Tours in Henderson. So this is heading way, way down south.
Mm-hmm.
Pierce began his professional scouting career with the Boy Scouts of America in 2010, and soon after founded Swamp Base as a program of the Boy Scouts of America. So this is a whole thing. Now, it gets a bit confusing when you're starting to look into this place, but it sounds, they talk about getting out there and checking out what they have to offer, but then all of a sudden it says, but it's for scouts only.
Oh.
So,
wait, what?
Yeah. Swamp Base was started in 2013 to offer high adventure treks and paddling trips through the Atchafalaya Swamp, modeled from the Boy Scouts of America's four national high adventure camps and bases, Philmont Scout Ranch, Northern Tier, the Florida Sea Base, and the Summit Betchel Reserve. Swamp Base joins their tradition of working to offer a premier camping and paddling adventures for youth serving organizations from across America. So this they are talking about, hey, here's this thing. Here's what we do. Here's what we offer. You know, there's this five-day paddle thing for all the your scout groups and school group, all that sort of stuff to come on down and check it out. So it's not a family thing, but if you work with some sort of youth-based group, this is a perfect thing to get them out there, especially you know, into nature and stuff.
Very cool.
When not working with youth development programs and creating new constituents for Louisiana's swamps, Pierce can be found paddling, photographing, and sharing his images of these environments. We are in the business of changing opinions. We get the opportunity to immerse people from all over the world into Louisiana's most iconic landscape, swamplands. We get to break any of those misconceptions, bust any of the myths that people have ingrained in their brains about swamps, and it's because of outside influences. All the gators are going to get you.
Yeah.
That's the core mission. We immerse people in the environment that is often misunderstood and hopefully leave them with a positive perception of this place. Through that, we feel like we're ambassadors of our state and for these wetlands. At this time, only scouts are eligible to participate in paddling trips. The reason being, scouts and leaders arrive with certifications of training in various courses needed to paddle, first aid, weather hazards, which ensure that they have an understanding of the adventure in front of them and how to handle any potential hazards. Alligator wrestling.
Yes.
Crocodile defense.
Yeah.
Snake hazards. The trek itself can be a daunting task. Obviously, there's lots of things that go beyond the swamp. For us, the swamp is a classroom that allows them to learn lifelong lessons that will make them better people in the future. And that's what a lot of these youth groups do. It's like, you know, give you skills to be a better person, you know. There's lessons about perseverance. Trek happens during June and July, so it can be hot for sure. And with the hot comes the bugs. Overcoming adversity, whether it's those pop-up afternoon thunderstorms or working with their paddle mates along the trail, is about trying new things and being open-minded to different experiences. Some of the most important lessons for the future is to learn how to work with other people, how to communicate, offer help, ask for help, and put your pride to the side. These are all things that make a better work environment and better home environment. So they're teaching them out there, and this is what you got to do, and then that leads into all aspects of your life. I mean, I grew up learning that when I was in Cubs and Scouts, and then in Air Cadets, and everything afterwards. It's like you take all these skills and these leadership opportunities and that, and you put them into your life, right? There are Those are the lessons you learn when you're out there for 5 days paddling in a swamp, in addition to all the lessons learned about the water, the connectivity, and the environment, and how to be better stewards of it, which is the big thing. There are common misconceptions about the swamp.
I can think of quite a few.
The obvious ones are usually going to be alligators, snakes, and mosquitoes. And the smell and the heat. Some people think of danger or eeriness.
Well, everything I know about swamps I got from comic books.
And Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, and Scooby-Doo, right? Yes, absolutely.
If Scooby-Doo isn't telling you the truth, then who is? That's what I'm saying. They think the swamp is infested with alligators. We hear that a lot when we watch TV. Infested is used as such a negative word instead of the fact that they're living in their natural habitat, where they actually belong.
Yes, we're in their area.
We hear the alligators are going to eat you, snakes are going to fall out of trees, and mosquitoes are going to suck every drop of blood from your body that the snakes and alligators didn't get.
Yes.
Trying to sell people to go into a swamp is not the easiest of tasks. Again, you have so many outside influences saying otherwise. And I mean, that's it. Until you're there, you don't know.
No, so, absolutely.
I mean, we talk about the alligators and joke about it sort of thing. But I, if I were ever go down there and paddle, I fully am not expecting now. And now that I've said about to say this, I'm not expecting snakes to fall from the tree. I'm not expecting to be attacked by a gaggle of alligators. What do alligators go in? It's not a gaggle of gators.
I have no idea.
A gang? A herd? Herd of gators? A murder of gators. Girders. I know that's not going to happen, but we still like to joke about it. We do various grassroots campaigns and get outsiders who are brave to come out here, then charge them with the responsibility of making a difference and promoting the swamp into a positive way, despite all the congregations of alligators. Thanks, buddy. A congregation of gators.
It's a collective noun.
Right? One of our key takeaways is to make sure that they understand their responsibility as a participant. It's not that they just battle this excellent trail for 5 days through the Ashifalaya. It's that they are the ones who are going to actually make a difference. That's what's so different about what we are and what we do and who our participants end up being. They have a direct role in the success of not only what our program is, but in the future sustainability of this environment. We're going to talk about something else a little later on in the episode. But this is the big thing, is getting the young people out there, because when you and I are dust, they're the ones looking after it.
Exactly.
So they got to have a say in it. They got to be looking into it. What better place to start than when they're little?
Yes.
Right?
And to appreciate the backcountry, to appreciate the forests and the streams and the rivers and yada, yada, yada. You have to enjoy it as a child and grow up with it. And, well, maybe not as a child, but eventually you have to find some likening of it, a young adult. But if you don't form if you just spend your time on video games, how are you going to care for this in the future and stop mining interests and stop clear-cutting interests and so on, right?
You're not going to care. Mm-hmm. It's not somewhere I go, so.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
In order for that to happen, you have to give them a good experience. We make sure they understand the species and the connectivity of this environment to our watershed. They understand the culture that is supported by the swamp and how amazing these people are in South Louisiana and across the Gulf Coast. So they do a 5-day paddle with the youth groups. Primary user group for our adventure trails are the scouts. Young people from across the country. We've had participants come from all corners, including Alaska and Hawaii. The core of the 5-day paddle trip is a 61.6-mile-long paddling trail that traverses through 4 parishes in the Ashifalaya Basin. We get a chance to feed them good local cuisine like red beans, gumbo, and jambalaya. Ooh, I could only take so much of that. They're battling through bayous, cypress forests, lakes, canals, and understanding the impacts of man on this environment as well. They're seeing all the wildlife and really soaking it all in. They have to earn every mile because they're paddling. So they're doing the work. It's not like somebody's boating them around. Every paddle stroke means something to them, whether it's their body feeling that effort or just the fact that they have a chance to really take in all this vegetation and scenery.
So something's just sticking my head here. So who in Hawaii is going to go, let's go to a swamp in Louisiana?
As opposed to a swamp in...
No, as opposed to surfing in Hawaii or something, right?
Something a bit different. Who from Northern Ontario is going to go, let's go down to Louisiana. Forget the bears up here. Let's go check out the gators.
I'm not afraid of the bears anymore. I need to find
alligators. Need to find a gator. Give me that little Friday night fright. That's true, too. Like, we talk about coming, I mean, last year we came across a bear on the portage and moose mm-hmm. and all yep, that. Yep, yep. Everything. And like, any two of these could have, like, done us in.
That moose would have trampled us.
And we just keep on going. Yeah. Like, okay, it's just, you know, oh, yeah, it's Tuesday. But down there, you're like, there's a gator, there's a snake up there. Look at the size of that spider.
It's really the humans you have to be careful of.
Yeah. About 10 years ago, we had a group from Indiana. We ran a fishing program, so we had a bunch of jug lines, and we were catching catfish for dinner. A few participants started pulling on the line, is bouncing around, and they think they've caught a big fish. They're pulling and pulling. Finally, they pull up the line real slow, of course. They got an 8-foot alligator attached to the end of the line. They all back up and almost simultaneously grab their phones to film the thing. We cut the alligator and let it go, but it went from this fear thing to this, oh my gosh, I've never been this close to this creature. How cool is this? I have to share this with everybody back home. And that's exactly what it is.
Grab the phone. Get the phone.
Yeah. Yeah. Wait, he's got Fred. His mom will never believe us. We said we watch him.
We said he was eaten by an alligator, yeah. But she won't believe us and then get it on video.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's cool, though, that they get to share that experience and they get to learn from it and hopefully learn from it and keep mm-hmm. it in their brains and move forward with it. Because, every kid that goes there isn't going to, you know, okay, yeah, I did that trip and that's cool. Maybe I'd do it again. But and there's others that are going to go, that was so awesome.
You know? So, again, things stick in my mind. So with the prevalence of phones that take video and trail cameras and all that, if we haven't seen a modern-day picture of a Sasquatch, they ain't out there.
Or
they're aliens that were visiting and they were seen in the 70s and they took off in their spaceships.
Or they've got some sort of photo hazing ability. They're magic.
Yes.
They got this ability to whenever you take a picture, something happens to your camera. It's just like all the electronics in your car go off when the aliens hover above you before you're abducted.
Like vampires can't be seen in a mirror.
Right? It's all part of the same sort of thing. There's all these similarities between all these creatures that there's just the visual aspect isn't there. But you get recordings of what people say, that sounds like, that's not a bear I hear back there. Well, it doesn't affect their voice. It's only strictly a visual thing.
What is
it? Can you hear a vampire on a tape?
Well, I don't know.
Just can't see them in a mirror.
I don't know.
What about aliens? Can you hear them on a tape? You just can't see them because all your electronics go
berserky. Well, they have technology. Aliens have technology.
Yeah. Or are aliens just vampire Sasquatches? Should we save this for another podcast? A different one altogether? Conspiracy theories from our brains.
Paddling Adventures Radio, After Dark.
Vampire Sam Squatches.
Yeah.
So, if you want more information, go to swampbasebsa.org. And they got a whole bunch of information of what they offer, who it's for, and what you can see and do, and... It sounds pretty cool.
It's very cool, yeah.
It's another one of those things for the young people to get to and check
it
out.
Did they say what months they are? Because I know in the summer
months.
Like, but when in the summer months? Because I've been Texas, Louisiana in July.
What we're saying, what, June, just when the bugs come out.
Because it's, the humidity is thick.
Yeah.
Like, it's like 110 degrees plus 100% humidity, and it's like, oh.
Right?
Please let the alligator take me now.
Please, alligator, come and get me. Yeah, it's the beginning of the summer there.
Hmm.
So I guess you're finished school, and then the next day you're sent off to Louisiana. Trek happens during June and July.
There you
go. For sure. Overcoming adversity, whether those pop-up afternoon thunderstorms or working their paddle mates along the trail. Yeah. June and July. Oh, what would be better than the hottest months of the year?
I know. It would be a little of a rapid acclimating.
Yeah. So what did you do in Louisiana? Melted.
I melted.
I lost 50 pounds.
I'm melting.
I was 40 pounds and I lost 50. I am just a puddle of sweat in Louisiana.
Yeah.
All right. Sort of. This what was I saying this was going to be tonight? Sort of a let's get everybody back to nature sort of thing. With the Minnesota River Record, they want to get people out there. So, here's a record. Yeah. This Louisiana swamp base. Hey, come on out and paddle with the gators and all that sort of stuff. If this happens, I'm pretty sure it'll get some people out there because, you know, then they don't have the excuse. But the days of peaceful internet-free camping trips in the Boundary Waters may soon be over.
Dun, dun, dun. Your kid will be like, I have internet. I'm playing Fortnite in Boundary Waters.
Tech companies will soon offer satellite service to ordinary cell phones that would improve coverage and safety in remote areas, including in some of Minnesota's most beautifully remote regions. It also means travelers could be subject to a barrage of calls and texts while trying to escape the hustle and bustle of modern life.
And that would simply be by choice. You could turn off your phone and still be disconnected.
Service currently extends as far as the Gunflint Trail, where AT&T installed a 200-foot cell tower in 2020 following controversy among those who prefer that the region stay off the grid. Now, there's a couple of cell towers mysteriously disguised as trees in Algonquin Park.
I remember
that tree looks odd.
That's a weird looking tree. But at least they did try and disguise them.
It's a cell phone maple. I'm sure of it. AT&T and AST Space Mobile announced an agreement to provide their first space-based broadband network to ordinary cell phones. AST Space Mobile plans to deliver 5 commercial satellites to Cape Canaveral for launch into low Earth orbit as soon as this summer. There are many situations where dead zones outside will become a thing of the past, thanks to the reach of satellite solution providing two-way connectivity. SpaceX T-Mobile launched the first 6 Starlink satellites equipped with direct-to-device service in January. They plan to begin to offer text service this year and expect to expand with other services in 2025. So you're going to have all these low-orbit satellites zipping around. If one of them fails and goes off kilter and just takes out
everything out,
people are screwed.
So I've read books where that's a theme of the
you
whole
book. Lie.
It's I have.
You've read this books.
Hush. But no, like this is something that is it's a serious concern. There's been a few movies about it too, one with George Clooney the George Clooney one that was a nuke that went off that caused everything to go crazy. But anyways, if you have...
Different book.
And so there's the concern that all you need is some country to send something up with a bunch of steel balls in it blow it up in space, and we're not going to space for another 1,000 years.
Yeah.
Right?
All that stuff floating up there.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, that's what they say about the, they have to go the same speed as anything else if they're doing a spacewalk.
Yeah.
Because if they're not going fast enough and some piece of space junk comes through,
yeah,
it's going right through an astronaut.
And so you, there's, if you go to the Interior Science Center, there was a display that I saw there, and it it shows a, there's a shuttle, a window from a space shuttle, and there's a aluminum strut or something from a space shuttle. One was, they're both hit by small chunks of what they estimate would be paint, like a paint chip. And you could see this little, like this deep pit in the glass window of the shuttle. And something else had hit this aluminum strut. And you could see that this like a little mini meteorite hole in it, right? And so it doesn't take much. If something's going at 14,000 kilometers an hour.
Imagine what that can do, a meat puppet up in a spacesuit.
Exactly, exactly.
Right through.
Right?
So 1 minute Fred was on the line, the next minute Fred was not.
Yeah.
I don't know who Fred is, but he's getting a lot of beatings tonight between alligators and spacesuits.
What was the old movie with the bugs and so they were fighting the bugs.
The bugs. Oh, Starship Troopers.
Yeah. So yeah. The bugs sent meteors or asteroids into Earth. They were like trajectorying these giant chunks of rock at Earth. It's like, you know, if something's going fast enough, it'll take you out.
Right?
So just think of that. So a couple satellites start breaking up and there's debris everywhere.
All of a sudden, everybody with their satellite connectivity out in the backcountry.
Boom, gone.
Don't know what happened.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden, there's no connectivity. So I'm not a fan of this idea. However, like you say, I don't need to turn my phone on. Yeah. So I don't, when I'm in the backcountry, if I have my phone, it's strictly a camera and I use the notes so I can make notes about my trip.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the phone could be dead for all I care.
Yeah.
However, if it does become a thing, my whole excuse about, yeah, you can't get a hold of me because I'm not anywhere where you can get cell phone service is dead in the water.
Because
that's my big thing now. Oh, well, if something comes up, we need to get a hold of you.
We need you.
Oh, you can call me, but I'm not anywhere I can get certain. There's no tree. There's no Scooby-Doo Yogi Bear tree that has a phone on it. But I would be beyond a tad annoyed if I was on a lake camping and all I heard for a few days was cell phones binging and ringing all night.
Bing, bing.
Yeah. Bling, bling.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would be annoyed.
Why do I hear somebody's cell phone ringing on a portage?
And I'd be looking at all my, the people I was with.
Going to murder
you. Is that
one
of you people? Does somebody have their phone on? Nope, nope. Came from across. And at night, if you're sitting there quietly on the rocks looking at the stars or something, you can hear things from across the lake.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'd be annoyed with that. So feeding from that one, there's Kai Humphrey, 17, admits to spending most of his time in front of a screen.
These numbers are shocking. I didn't think about...
Secondary student from Bendigo... Bendigo.
Bendigo.
I keep wanting to put an N in there for some reason.
Dingo got my baby.
Bendigo, a regional Victoria, Australia, says he was on his computer up to 5 hours a night doing homework and gaming and 8 hours a day on his phone.
That's crazy.
Well, they have their phones on all day at school, right? They're doing stuff before school, probably sneaking texts and stuff during class, lunch breaks, afternoon classes, on the way home from school. Adds up. My headphones are practically fused to my head. It's this acclimation to technology and disconnection from nature that sparked the idea for a competition by the North Central Catchment Management Authority.
That's quite the
NCCMA. To find a couple of Gen Zers to unplug from technology and spend 5 days kayaking and camping along the Bendigo Creek. And in classic selfie style, the trip would be filmed on GoPros by the two chosen Gen Zers with a documentary crew in tow so it can all be shared and liked on YouTube.
Look, there's a sky.
Yeah. After handing over their phones, the next challenge is the creek itself. Parts of the Bendigo Creek are highly urbanized, while other parts run through suburbs, farmland, recreational riverside parks, swampy marsh, and managed national parklands. And down there, they got big animals that everything tries to kill you down there.
Big, small, everything. Everything's trying to murder you in Australia.
You can't kayak the entire length like you might its northern neighbor, the Murray River. And that was a bit of a surprise for Kai and fellow Gen Z traveler, 21-year-old university student Jesse Manuelian, when they learned how to kayak a few days before the trip. So they just learned how to do that, and they're getting sent out for 5 days. So we'll be hiking a bit. I'm good at hiking. I think kayaking is where I'm going to struggle, but I'm excited, she says. Both have camped before, but Kai says he's actively avoided it ever since. Want to go camping? No. Sure, it'll be fine. No. I reckon there were maybe one or two camps, and I absolutely despised it, he says. I like the comfort of my room, being into the more suburban street life. Jesse is a self-confessed Candy Crush fanatic from Melbourne. Okay, this is what threw me about this whole article. Because when Candy Crush first came out, I think I got, oh yeah, level like 30.
I've never played it.
I'm really there.
I've never played it.
She is currently at level 6,000 on the popular tile matching video game with 16,640 levels.
Oh, wow.
Level 6,000. And some of those levels just to get to level 30 took me like forever. Like I'm talking weeks. So how much time has she spent on this?
I know, right?
And she's always has her phone within reach. She also spends a great deal of time online for her nursing and business administration studies, but she jumped at the chance to unplug for 5 days and experience more of the great outdoors than just beachside holidays. I never thought I would do anything like this, and when I saw the opportunity, I had to take it. Only concern for Jesse, who did outdoor education in high school, is encountering wildlife. I'm just afraid about the snakes. Bugs, spiders, and snakes. Yeah, we'll have to tackle that when we get to it. Brad Drust from NCCMA is keen to include more of his untapped generation's voice in local environmental work. As we were saying there with the scouts, and they're in this swamp base. Get the younger people in there because they got to have the voice. The CEO says, as an organization, it has found the voices of young people aren't as loud as they should be, given their stake in the future. There's a saying that we don't inherit the earth, we borrow it from our children. While these Gen Zers aren't exactly children, they've got a big stake in the future of our natural environment. So this is about getting Gen Zers off their devices, he says. That's exactly it. I mean, you're looking at this. We went on a canoe trip. My brother, buddy, and son came along. And the son, he was 10 or 11, 12-ish at the time, spent the entire trip in the tent when we weren't outside, like portaging or paddling. And even still, like he didn't get out paddling much because he was sticking to the tent because he was adamant that every animal was out there to get him and everything. Because he sat in the tent playing this game called Big Game Hunter, a video game. And in the video game, the animals attack you. And he was sure that's exactly what it was like in real life. If that's the case, this planet is doomed.
Yes, exactly.
Right? So this is what he says, getting the Gen Zers off their devices. Good things come from disconnecting, getting into nature, all the well-being benefits that we know about, but also good things for the community more broadly as they then take up a louder voice in the management of our natural environment. Drust is hoping that posting videos of the journey on social media will help build a profile in that Gen Z cohort. Getting them connected to the work that we do and the opportunities, they got to have a voice in the work we do, he says. So the journey, the trip that they did. To begin the journey, Jesse and Kai were welcomed to country by local Jara man Jason Kerr, who shared with them the significance of the creek and surrounding landscape to the Jaja Warung people. A traditional smoking ceremony cleansed any bad spirits, the smoldering native leaves clearing the way ahead for the adventurers and also connected them to their new surroundings. Along the way, they tested the water quality, planted trees with primary school students at Huntley, just north of Bendigo, where the creek starts to revert to a more natural state, and learned about bush tucker and bush medicine as a significant cultural heritage site by one of the area's traditional owners. They were attacked by bugs, slipped in mud along the creek edges. It rained the last 2 days. They had to wheel their kayaks almost as much as they paddled them, but they came out of the experience all smiles. From pulling the kayaks to climbing over trees, all the tears, spiders, animals, falling down in water, being lost in the dark, and then just yelling at each other. It's been phenomenal, they laugh. While Jessie admits to screaming about every spider they encountered for the first 2 days, she was far more chilled about them at the end of the trip. Orb spiders. I saw probably 5 billion of them. Probably isn't an exaggeration. I was like, it's just making its web. It's over there in the corner. It's doing its little thing. But did they miss their phones? I really struggled. I was looking for it in my pocket at all times, but also missing that social contact with friends and family, Jesse reflects. It was really weird for the first couple of days, not calling my mom, not speaking to my partner, not speaking to my friends. It was really hard getting used to that in the first couple of days. Which, yeah.
Yeah, I can see that. Withdrawal.
Kai agrees everything was tough for the first few days, but his attitude has definitely changed. Sitting there and watching a meteorite go across the sky with no light pollution at all,
yeah.
I was like, I don't need a phone to capture this. This is a moment for me. I don't feel like I've ever been so peaceful with myself. Jesse recommends everyone, not just Gen Zers, should unplug every now and again. I've really been connecting with the outdoors for the past couple days, and you really don't need your phone as much as you think. Gets you thinking, doesn't it?
It does. It does.
Mm-hmm. I've gotten in the habit over the last 6 months of putting my phone down.
Mm-hmm.
And then a little while later, what do I do with my phone?
I do that all the time. I'm always losing my phone.
Because I'm going, like, consciously coming in the house at the end of the day, put my phone down.
Yeah.
And I just put it down. Yeah. And wherever I am. And I think, oh, I'll just put my phone down. And then I forget where I did. Oh, someone might be trying to get a hold of me or something. So it's not like I got to be on it, but everybody, expects you to be on it.
Yeah.
So it's just sort of that like, okay, well, yeah, nope, nobody's there. So just leave it there. Come back a couple hours later. Nope. Just leave it there. Or, oh, somebody's trying to email me or somebody. So there's Gen Zers that are clients or work for clients. And Saturdays, Sundays, I'll get emails from them I don't touch them till Monday.
Yeah.
It's not, I just happen to see they come up and like, what are you? It's 4 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon. What are you doing? Right? Like, are you that dependent on having the technology and the phone that you just feel the need you have to do it?
Yeah.
Right? And there's, with health and safety in that, you are supposed to be telling people, do not do work on the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
You are not supposed to be doing work on the weekends.
And you should.
That is your off time, exactly. Your downtime away from this. And yeah, there's been a few people that we've had out now say, stop it.
Yeah.
Right? And with my clients, I say, you can send me stuff. I'll tell you right now, I am forbidden by my work to do any work
off
hours. On the weekend.
Yeah. It's when I recover and unplug and.
Yeah. People need to do it. People need to disconnect, drop the phone, get outside, do other things. Go on a 5-day kayak trip through Northern Australia.
Do you know the little message signature line often at the bottom of an email signature? It's just a little message, this, that, the other thing.
Oh, the legalese.
Or whatever. So I've been seeing more and more lately at my work where it says... And quite a few people are attaching it. It says, my hours may not be the same as your hours. Do not respond to this email until you're back inside your normal hours. Something like that. So it's like, don't respond to this at 4 o'clock on a Sunday. Wait until you're in hours.
Yeah.
Don't respond outside of your hours.
Yeah.
So, and that's a healthy way to look at it and go about it. So.
My email says, hey, I accept donuts and gifts at all times.
Does it?
Actually, I didn't realize, because when I first got my phone, I put the name on my phone, Obi-Sean Kenobi.
Oh, okay.
I didn't realize when I send an email, it puts at the bottom from the phone of Obi-Sean Kenobi.
Oh.
And it's my work phone. So my clients, one of my clients one day says, hey, Obi-Sean, how you doing?
And you're like, well, how do you know that?
Because it comes in on every, it's always like for 3 years, it's come in on every single one of your emails. Oh, damn.
I didn't realize that was included.
Yeah. From the phone of Obi-Sean Kenobi. Yeah. That went over well. Well, no one cares. Everybody thinks it's a... And that's what my little tip in life I tell people when you're on the phone. If someone says, hey, how you doing? Oh, just groovy. Groovy. And it just... The conversation's just changed. If you throw, I'm groovy.
Yeah.
Like the conversation totally changes.
It catches people because they're...
It really does.
Instead of people saying, I'm good. It's a throwaway comment. It means nothing. It's more of a conversation stopper than a conversation starter.
Yep. I'm fairly mediocre, I must say. And yourself? I'm hanging up now. That's how. Click.
You're freaking me out.
You're freaking me out. Can somebody else take this call? the whole thing, this week has been get outside.
Yes.
People are doing things to encourage other people to get outside one way or the other. Minnesota River record, go and beat the record. Louisiana swamp base, go down for a 5-day paddle and maybe you'll catch a catfish, maybe you'll catch an alligator.
Maybe an alligator catch you.
Keep your phones handy because you might be getting...
Phone calls.
Cell phone service everywhere, so you don't have to worry about missing a text or a call. You can be on a canoe trip in the middle of Boundary Waters and you'll get your phone call. And if you're Gen Z, disconnect.
Yeah.
Go on a trip. Enjoy for a couple of days. Relax.
It is pretty
incredible. The world's not going anywhere.
No, it's not. But it is pretty incredible how fast technology is advancing. Just think, like, 100 years ago, it was like, you know...
Horse
and buggy. They were just starting with fuel and motorized vehicles. They started with electric vehicles, and then whoever the billionaire dude was back in the day bought everything up and killed the electric industry. And it's technology has advanced so much in the last decade or two. It's incredible.
I think they can stop when they introduce the like hoverboard. So, you know, like from everything from a skateboard to you can load a whole mess of bricks and this hover thingy and just boom.
I'm waiting for that
anything one. Like a speeder bike or something like that, I'd be the first one out there buying one.
I'd be running into
you get
trees.
Something like out of Star Trek or Star Wars with one of those speeder bikes.
Yeah.
I would be on there. So I'd, 50 grand, I'll take two. Put my license plate on the back. Do I got to get one on the front too somewhere?
I don't. Yeah. We don't need roads where we're going.
I don't. I mean, I don't need laser beams to start.
It would be nice.
It would be nice. Well, if I had, we joke about that. Going down the 401 in the mornings and at the end of the day. If I had lasers, rockets, or something missiles on my truck,
there'd be trouble brewing.
Day one. I probably wouldn't make it even to the 401. I'd really be stuck on the road from my work before someone ticked me off and I blew them into the ditch.
People would learn pretty quick, oh, I better drive a lot more calmly.
Someone's driving their car and weaving all over the place. Missile lock? What the?
Freak people out.
Yeah. So it's probably a good thing that
they don't have
those on vehicles. Does my car come with
do I have shields?
Any sort of armament?
Shields.
Because, you know.
I need chaff launchers.
I mean, Ford has offered me. Uh, Well, like I say, the first little trip up north with the canoe and camping, yes, and bugs, awesome. And oh, snake! I saw 3 garter snakes.
Yep.
Easy peasy. One was in a wood pile. One was laying in the middle of a street or path, just
okay,
mellowing. And the other one was at the side of a path, just mellowing in the sunlight. Snakes are out.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people posting pictures on social media lately. Yep. Like a few people have posted northern water snake or something like that. I can't remember what they called it.
Yep, they're out there.
Yeah,
they're all. It's snake and bug season.
Mm-hmm.
Bears are out, and
it's the deers. I think the ticks are more common and more dangerous than a bear.
Yeah, I haven't seen any though.
Ticks and or bears?
This year, both. Last year, ticks. All right, anything else?
Nothing from me.
Nada? Zip? Zero?
Zippo.
Hot diggity. We're going to the canoe museum on Saturday.
Yes, we are. Is anybody going to join us?
Well, I don't know. We're going to be there about 10:30?
Opens at 10 a.m.
Opens at 10 a.m. We're going to be there for
5 on Saturday.
Yeah.
And so we'll be there fairly early and maybe we can see what we can see and...
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing that big hall of canoes.
Yeah, yeah.
The big hall of canoes.
Are we bringing a canoe?
I don't know. They're talking rain.
Oh, yeah?
In the afternoon,
they have their own dock and everything now.
Yeah, so we'll check it all out, and then we just go up for a canoe at another day with
Kevin
Callen.
Let's take one of the display canoes.
Right? Start the car! Start the paddles! You grab the paddles, look at the canoe, and run! Hold the door! Yeah, so we're going to go up. We're going to be there about 10:30 this Saturday, the new Canadian Canoe Museum, and we'll wander around and whatnot.
Yes, so that's the 25th of May for those that are, in case you're listening to this in June, we're not going to be there this weekend in June. But yes. If you're listening to this in May, on the 25th
May
of May.
May 25th, 2024.
Yes.
We are going to be at the Canadian Canoe Museum. Good idea, buddy.
I'm not ready.
We stood there for 6 hours. They didn't show up.
We were there in September 2025, and we did not see them.
Oh, geez. Alrighty. So, yeah, if anybody sees us there, say hello and have a little chit-chat.
Yes.
In the meantime, if you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook and Instagram. You can download or stream our episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Just Google Paddling Adventures Radio Podcast. And
comes up right away.
Like a billion different sites. Or you can just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com, and you can stream or download all our episodes. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with your friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.